Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder, and we're talking about the Billy Meier case this evening. I've been doing a lot of shows on the Meier case, particularly on the weekend. I'm still bogged down in my new normal is just working incredibly amounts of long hours in the day job, including weekends. So I don't know when I'll be able to get some other guests on. I'm hoping to be able to do that before too long. In any case, I still very much enjoy talking about the Meier case, and I think it's probably the most important thing that we can talk about. And I talked briefly yesterday about disclosure and that people like to talk about disclosure, and they kind of want this formal thing where the government has somebody come forward like a vice president or somebody of that nature and reveal the fact that there's intelligent life in the universe. Well, people may not be aware of this, but there have been a lot of insiders that have come forward over the years. I think of Sergeant Clifford Stone, who was in the Air Force, and he was told, or he was given a task of going out with these crash retrieval units to be an interface with some of the extraterrestrials, both landing sites and crash sites. He would interface with these people, and he was able to get telepathic contact with these individuals. He had some kind of talent to be able to do that. And he talks about the Heinz 57 varieties, that there were some 57 varieties that the governments of the world knew about of different extraterrestrials that were coming here. I don't know how real that is. Another insider that's come forward is Robert Dean, who worked at the SHAPE headquarters in Europe, which stands for Supreme Headquarters Allied Powers Europe. And he was allowed to read a top secret document. He had top secret clearance, I believe. Anyway, this document talked about six extraterrestrial races that were visiting the Earth on a regular basis, two of which looked exactly like us. He also read about different landing sites and some crashes that occurred. Another one that comes to mind is the day after Roswell, and the author of that, Colonel Corso. Geez, I almost forgot his name. Colonel Corso, who wrote about the Roswell crash and the reverse engineered technologies associated with that. It's a very interesting book. I recommend you read it. Another person from the Air Force is Colonel Wendell Stevens, who wrote several books about the Meier case, and he also wrote a book, the Stefan DeNardi case, which is a very interesting contact that occurred in the northern part of Europe. There were others. Charles Hall, for example, has written a book, or three or four books, called The Millennial Hospitality, I believe it is. I have one of his books. He's a very interesting guy. Talks about the tall whites, which he interacted with on one of the Air Force bases in the Southwest. I think it was the Tonopah Test Range or one of those. So, and the most important one I like to bring out is Dr. Hermann Oberth, who was the mentor of Wernher von Braun. He was a rocket scientist for the Germans. And he said openly in 1970 in a public meeting that the German people couldn't take credit for their technological advancements alone because they had been helped by people of other worlds. So I think the first disclosure has happened. The second disclosure, I think primarily, is going to be the Meier material. And the Meier material is what's going to teach the people of the Earth the creational natural laws. It's going to allow us to solve our problems. with the environment, with our warlike natures and all the different social problems that we have will be eventually cleared up by the Meyer information. Now, why can I say that? Because Edward Albert Meyer has written over 40 books, and these books are on the spiritual life. And what we need to do in order to live a prosperous, healthy, happy life, not destroying the nature around us. So I am going to open up one of his books. It's called The Way to Live. It's in the German. It's called Die Art zu Leben. And I'm going to read a little bit about reincarnation here. And let me begin on page 400 here, the second paragraph down. For the spirit form, the state of death is a state of a further life in another dimension. Now, we all have a spirit form. Most people think of that as the soul. I think the soul is really kind of a confused term. What we have is a spirit form in the middle of our brain in an area called the superior colliculus. The spirit form is a fragment of the universal consciousness. It's your spiritual consciousness. It's the part of you that never dies. So for the spirit form, the state of the death is a state of further life in another dimension of the other world, where the duration of the stay for the processing of all the facts collected in the material life is used for further evolution. So when you die, your spirit form will come out of your middle brain, and it'll take with it your consciousness. Your consciousness that I'm referring to is the material consciousness mentioned in that passage. The spirit form and your material consciousness go into this other dimension called the spirit realm. And your material consciousness goes into an area that your spirit form created, which is called the overall consciousness block. And all your past life memories there are processed and distilled into their essence. So what you learned in terms of the essence of, for example, of logic and love and reasonableness and patience and all these other important virtues are synthesized by the overall consciousness block. And then your spirit form will absorb these evolutive values. And the evolutive values cause the spirit form to become more powerful and more knowing. So that's what the purpose of the reincarnation is. It is for the evolution of your consciousness. So let's continue here. Consequently, therefore, in the realm of the other world, the spirit form does not simply live through a fallow time without sense and benefit. Rather, there occurs a learning-based and evolution-based activity until that time when a return to a material human body becomes urgent and the next rebirth brings a new life and becoming, which after a certain time, however, is also integrated again into the passing, from which then, in turn, a new becoming occurs. So what happens is we live material life, many, many material lifetimes. Most of the people on the earth have about a spirit form of about 4 million years old. But we don't remember. We mostly don't remember what has happened in our past. In The Way to Live book, around page 406, it says, the memories of the earlier life, however, would influence the new personality in such a way that a devastating confusion would come about, which would impair the material consciousness to the point of insanity. So most people that remember previous life stuff are very young. So, and they, and for some reason, it's usually when their previous life was cut short abruptly. Now, this isn't the Meyer material. This is just other stuff I've read where I've seen this. And usually the children will remember details that are incredible. about their previous lives until they're about 8 or 10 years old, and then the memories go away. Because you have to focus on the lifetime that you're in now. And forgetting is a protection for the consciousness so that the personality can develop freely and clearly in the frame prescribed by the creational laws and recommendations. So each time you reincarnate, you'll get a new personality. You'll get a new subconscious, a new unconscious, a new conscious mind. Now, the subconscious will hold the memories of your previous personalities. You have a spiritual lineage of all of your other personalities where you live material life. But each time you reincarnate, the child, you're a child. You have to learn. You have to learn to talk. You have to learn to walk. You have to learn to read. But you have an advantage in that your spiritual consciousness will impulse the material consciousness. And you'll get these hunches. You'll have a knowing. You'll have like an inner guidance that will help you in making decisions. And this is how we grow in wisdom from lifetime to lifetime. Let me continue here. So we reincarnate through seven different stages. The first stage is primitive life. The second stage is the stage we're in here on the earth. It's called rational life, which is kind of a misnomer because we're not very rational a lot of the time. But we have the ability to think rationally. But a lot of times we cannot control our thoughts enough to be rational. And we can talk more about that later. The third stage is intelligent life. And just a few people on the earth have moved over into the intelligent life stage. And these stages last thousands and thousands of years, even millions of years. And in the fourth stage is called real life. Now, something very bizarre and amazing happens in this stage. And societies in the fourth stage are very, very advanced, beyond our imagination advanced. And they unlock the wonders of creation, and they start to do things to us that boggle our mind. And one of the things that the extraterrestrial humans in this stage can do is they can do genetic engineering to the point that they can create sentient intelligence, which is something beyond our wildest imagination. And, for example, Semyase's ship, which is Billy's third contact, the central computer in her ship was a biological intelligence that she had telepathic contact with, a biological intelligence that was self-aware. So, in a sense, her ship was a living being with a metallic body. So this is the fourth stage of evolution. And you can imagine that knowledge of what these civilizations can do is practically traumatic to people, a lot of people that are not ready for this. And that's why, to get back to disclosure, that's why I think the way that disclosure is going is okay. Because now the people that are ready for this kind of wild and crazy, amazing information can take it in. And they can take it in at their own pace. Because there are people out there, believe me, that this kind of information would be very traumatic to. I mean, very elderly people, particularly, you know, in, let's say, West Virginia, Kentucky, or somewhere that are very highly religious. This is just traumatic for them. They're not ready in this lifetime for it. So I think it's okay the way disclosure is going. I don't think we have to push like crazy. I think we just have to let nature take its course. But it's very important that we focus on the material here so that those that are ready can move forward at a pace that is helpful for the planet, because the people that are involved now in the second stage of what I call second stage of disclosure, which is really kind of like the enlightenment of the human race, those people are very important. And we're the first, we're the tip of the spear, and we're bringing this information to a world that's asleep and confused and dangerous. So be careful out there. Don't bring this information to people that aren't ready. I mean, there's good reasons why people aren't ready. I talked about the fourth stage of evolution. There's also a fifth stage. And at that level, a lot of the Pleiaren that Billy has met with are at the fifth stage of evolution. And some of them are what are called Ishwish, Kings of Wisdom. And it's at this stage that you can really control. There's power. There's a tremendous power associated with your spirit form. You know, Semyase could burn photographs with her mind in one contact report. It talks about how she burned some photographs that Billy had brought with him or something, because Billy went forward in time with Semyase to San Francisco to the time when there's supposed to be this great earthquake. And he got to see the devastation, and he also saw a specific kind of cars that we had at that time in the future that are very unusual. So he took photographs of some things, but he wasn't really supposed to show these photographs to anyone. But it turned out, I guess, I don't know that he might have, I don't remember, but Semyase burned the photographs with her mind. The point is, we have tremendous power in our thoughts, tremendous abilities that we just don't even know that we have. And the real focus for the show has been learning to control our thoughts, which also is related to learning to control your emotions. And one of the most important things that you can do is to evaluate your own state, your own conscious state. In other words, one of the things I've learned lately to tell myself, to remind myself, is if I'm starting to feel a little weak or a little like my thoughts are out of control, is to tell yourself, I'm confident, I am optimistic, I am relaxed, I am cheerful. Now, you can tell yourself it because there's going to be plenty of opportunity where pressures are coming on you. Pressures while you're trying to strive, while you're trying to make progress, there's going to be a lot of pressures. So tell yourself, I'm confident, I'm optimistic, I'm cheerful, I'm relaxed. That'll help you kind of keep your act together. Because and the only reason I bring up these statements is because these are kind of pulled out of from about page 200 to about page 230 of the book Might of Thoughts. And this is something that I pulled together, I think it was last week at some time that I finally, because this stuff can be real complicated, and it's sometimes helpful to kind of simplify it. Let me read a little bit of what it says here on page 212. Cheerfulness in a lived form is more valuable for the human being and more desirable than gold, platinum, or diamonds. It is a work of knowledge, of wisdom, and of lived practical experience. All that which pertains to the joy, the peace, the love, the freedom, the fairness, the righteousness, the humaneness of the knowledge, the wisdom, and the equalized harmony is concentrated in the cheerfulness. You know, and if you're angry, you're not cheerful. And there's a lot of reasons to be angry today for various reasons. But however, this kind of cheerfulness has nothing in common with artificial cheerfulness, which is presented as an illusion for purely societal reasons. or which is called forth by alcohol consumption. And let me stop there a little bit. You know, sometimes I think a little bit of wine now and then can take the edge off things, but you have to learn to bring your back your own cheerfulness. Abuse of drugs and medications is a bad thing. Because genuine cheerfulness is actually a state which is based on achieved knowledge as well as lived practical experiences and wisdom, which expresses that which wisdom contains in itself, a life-sustaining essence. So cheerfulness has a life-sustaining essence to it. And it's a genuine cheerfulness that I'm talking about here. And it's actually an expression of wisdom. And we live in a society which brings a lot of pressures associated with it and brings a lot of challenges, a lot of times which are unnecessary. And it really challenges us, makes it hard to be cheerful sometimes when so many societal pressures are placed on us for so many reasons. How pathetic and insignificant the forced or artificially called forth cheerfulness appears in comparison, as well as a mere money earning and a material craving for pleasure, as well as the human being's vices and addictions. True cheerfulness is a circumstance of life which is based in the ocean of truth, in which the waves endlessly keep everything in motion and yet preserve calmness and peace deep below, where beyond the reach of the storms, the life is created and maintained in an unimagined degree of diversity. So that's a great analogy, by the way, because no, however stormy it is on the surface of things, far, far below in the deep waters are stillness and calmness. And that's what we're working on here, is maintaining the stillness and the calmness through this whole material consciousness you have. Your material consciousness is kind of dominated in a way, in some aspects, by the unconscious mind. The unconscious mind is kind of a gatekeeper or a secretary, and it evaluates things quickly, very, very quickly, like when you touch your hand on a hot stove, it's your unconsciousness that pulls your hand back. So you have unconscious and subconscious forces which you need to be aware of, because your conscious mind can get overwhelmed by these unconscious and subconscious forces. And we have two eyes. You have the real you, which is your spiritual consciousness. It's related to your spirit form. But there's a false I that's talked about on page 418 of The Way to Live. The false I attempts to complicate and deny everything because it knows very precisely that it is fundamentally endangered by knowledge, truth, and evolution. So this false personality is endangered by you getting wisdom. Let me continue here. The I attempts to complicate and deny everything because it knows very precisely that it's fundamentally endangered by knowledge, truth, and evolution. All of the I's inhibiting attempts to sabotage the way of evolution are senseless and negating in spite of all the efforts. If one continues to go the way of the realization of the positive, whereby the practice of meditation is a very great help. Let me talk about meditation for a while. Boy, I don't do it enough. I don't meditate enough. Not at all. But I meditated 20 minutes yesterday and 20 minutes today. It is one of the best ways to kind of bring yourself back together that you can ever do. And what you're searching for and focusing on in meditation is to clear your conscious mind as much as possible and keep thoughts out. And so a thought will come in and you just kind of push it out. They'll come in, just push them out, especially verbal thought. What you want to focus on is some kind of mental image, like a red rose, for example, or a blue sky or green hills. Billy often talks about focusing on the red rose. And just keep that image in your mind. And that will be one of the ways that you can kind of, you get a rest that's even more profound than sleep. So don't forget about your time to meditate. So anyway, we have this false I which complicates everything and denies everything because it knows very precisely that it is endangered. The human being's I is a very mighty, and it exercises a tyranny. So you will experience a tyranny from your own false artificial side. So you got two personalities that are vying for dominance. Keep that in mind. Let me talk about a moment of gladness. This is something that's talked about in the Way to Live book. And one may simply contemplate a moment of gladness, which perhaps simply arises because one sees the snowflakes floating down or a sunbeam which mysteriously fingers through the forest. But it can also be a flower on the edge of a path or a bird and its twittering, which please the consciousness. These are moments of peace, of the love, of the happiness, and of the equalizedness and harmony, as well as of the reflection and insight. These are the moments which work deep into the inner part of the consciousness and make one's feelings tingle and please the psyche. And these moments and their distinguishing characteristics must be retained so that they constantly remain in one's memory. So you should try to focus on, if you do have a moment that's really wonderful, try to burn that into your photographic memory so you can recall it when you need it, because you're going to have plenty of opportunities where you won't have those kind of moments. Anyway, I kind of went off on a tangent there in the Way to Live book. It's a very good book. Billy's written over 40 books. I think I heard him say over 50 books at one time. They're originally all written in German, and then they're translated. And when you buy one of his books, you'll have one page of German, one page of English. So you can kind of compare the two together. You know, Billy, like I said, he grew up in Bulach, Switzerland. He's quite an accomplished author. He lives in this tiny mountain village in Switzerland called Hinterschmidruti, nestled in the pine forest in the mountains in northern Switzerland. He grew up in Bulach, Switzerland, where he started having his first contacts. And they happened when he had a contact, let's say, call it a contact, his first one when he was 6 months old. He wasn't conscious of it. He wasn't aware of it. But Billy almost died of a pneumonia when he was 6 months old. This extraterrestrial man saved his life. This man named Spoth, who somehow appeared in his bedroom and healed Billy with some kind of electronic device that this man had. Spoth is a member of a race of beings that call themselves now the Pleiaren. They allow themselves to be called the Pleiadians originally. Now, this is a bit of a misnomer that was done on purpose because they knew that in future time that there would be hoaxers, people or people that were fooling themselves, that never had real contacts, And these people would say they had contacts with Pleiadians. And it's really important. Read in the contact reports with Sloth, because it will explain that there is no human life in the Pleiades. There has never been human life in the Pleiades. There might be a little bit of biological life, like at a very low level, like bacteria or something like that. But the Pleiaren live 80 light years beyond our Pleiades in a different dimension. Now, I hate that word in many ways, dimension. It's the Meyer material refers to it as a different space-time configuration. So our universe has seven counter-rotating layers. Our universe does. And in the fourth layer is the material belt. That's where the planets and the galaxies and the star systems are. Within that material belt are seven space-time configurations, which are like variations on each other, for lack of a better word. And in terms of time, they're just like a split second apart. So Sloth and his people, the Pleiaren, are in a different space-time configuration. Now, in their quote-unquote dimension, there are more planets, and they are closer together. These planets, there are more planets that support human life. So these people are probably more aware of other humans, other life, intelligent life forms out there than we are. So our ancestors, many of the ancestors of the people on Earth are from a different space-time configuration. The people from Lyra Vega are the ancestors of many people on Earth. There's a lineage that come from Lyrians called the Pleiarens. There's another lineage called the Timmers. The Lyrians also came here on the Earth about 22 million years ago. And at another point about 390,000 years ago. And they violated certain rules when they were here, some of them did, and they procreated with the Earth peoples. So there was a naturally developing Earth human on the Earth at that time, mostly dark-skinned. Not to say there weren't dark-skinned extraterrestrials that visited here, there were. But what happened was there was the violation of their own rules. And as a judgment on these people from Lyra Vega that were here, as a judgment, their own people came to the Earth and they took the technologies of these people from Lyra Vega. And so the people here from Lyra Vega that had broken these rules were forced to live their lives out on the Earth. And what happened is these people end up dying on the Earth. And the planet that you die on is the planet that you reincarnate on. This is a creational natural law. And you'll hear a lot of people in the New Age community saying, oh, it's up to free will. You can choose what planet you reincarnate on. Well, when you're in the spirit realm, your material consciousness is separated from your spiritual consciousness. So all that kind of decision-making ability is gone until you reincarnate again into the material world. So what's taught about reincarnation in the Meyer material is different. Let me explain a little bit more about this. when you're driving down the road in your car and you're making these decisions to slow down, to speed up, to go around the corner, to turn on your turn signal, to watch other traffic, this is the function of your material consciousness. At our current level of evolution, our spiritual consciousness is mostly just recording what is going on for processing in the spirit realm. So that's a fundamental difference than most people. So when you're in the spirit realm, you're not really, at our level of evolution, using your volition. You're not making decisions. What's going on over there is your spirit form is absorbing what you've learned from the last lifetime. And you typically spend, if you lived 100 years in a material physical lifetime on the earth, you would spend about a lifetime and a half, I believe, 150 years in the spirit realm for your spirit form to process everything that you learned in that previous life and to prepare a new personality and a new material consciousness so that your spirit form can enter into the body of a child at 21 days after the sperm fertilizes the egg. But what happens on a planet with overpopulation, it takes longer. The spirit form doesn't get to spend that extra time in the spirit realm. So it comes back in a lot sooner, maybe in 50 years, maybe in 10 years, maybe in a year. So what happens is spirit forms come in without enough time in the spirit realm, and this causes a lack of independence, over-dependence on parents, and it causes difficulty, particularly for people of the male sex. And you may have noticed more and more men are feminine. And this is in part because the reincarnational patterns have been disturbed on the earth. We have a population of about 9 billion almost 9 billion people. And so spirit forms will get pulled out of the spirit realm too soon. So this process that I'm telling you about is very important. And the trouble that is happening on the earth is that we have a tremendous imbalance. Everything that exists in the natural world is there for a reason. And if you look hundreds of years ago, our planet had much larger forests, gigantic forests. And these forests have a very important role because in the winter, when there's snow and the sun comes down, if there's no trees there, that light gets reflected right back. If there are trees there, those trees will help to absorb a little bit more of that heat from the light, and all that light won't get reflected back. Now, in the summertime, when it's really hot, especially in the very dense forests, it'll be 10, 15, 20 degrees cooler from the shade in the forest. And what happens is the forests moderate the weather. So you won't have really hot air slamming into really cold air, which causes the gigantic storms and the tornadoes and all that sort of thing. The other thing that happens because of the forests is that the wind blows over the top of the trees in the forest, and it creates kind of a vortex which spins like a spiral. And this spinning motion of the wind will help form clouds. And the clouds will then rain, and keep the droughts from happening. Remember the gigantic drought in Southern California that lasted for years? Well, things like that happen for many different reasons, but partially because of the destruction of the forests that have occurred. So we here on the earth have no idea of the destruction that's going on because of overpopulation. And the other destruction is because of our thinking and our consciousness. And let me read something here from the Way to Live book, page 328. But the mass of the modern human beings produce no frame or context in which the experiencing of the true nature of the consciousness could be understood. Quite the contrary, everything is done so that the consciousness's state of equalizedness is suppressed and blocked so that it cannot cause any impulsations in the thinking, in the feeling, and the emotions, and in the psyche that would give cause for joy and feelings of happiness. So what is happening is we do not have feelings of joy and happiness anymore because we're kind of numb. We're dumbed down. We're intentionally in a state of blockedness. So the state of equalizedness of the consciousness is suppressed. We're always searching for neutral positive in our thinking. So we are essentially blocking our own feeling of happiness. Suppressed means to prevent the development, action, or expression of a feeling, impulse, idea, to restrain. An impulse is said to be the influence of a particular feeling, a mental state, etc. Impulse applied to an object produces an equivalent vector change in its linear momentum. So these impulses from the spiritual consciousness are very, very important, and they shouldn't be blocked. And when you meditate, you're closer to the impulses that come from your spiritual consciousness. So Billy learned very many of these very, very important and profound things when he was a young boy. He had in many ways the mentality of a 35-year-old man. And the older people would come to interact with Billy. And one of the most important things that he learned as a young boy was the term creation. And the creation is the universal consciousness. Creation also refers to our physical universe. And there are certain creational natural laws like love, which is the first law. And love is the highest principle in all creation. And through it, everything exists in absolute logic. The incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation. So creation expresses its love through the creation, through physically creating things. The love of creation radiates. Every tiny plant and every tiny animal fulfills its purpose in love. And you can sense the radiating love of creation if you open yourself up to it. And one of the things that Billy talks about in the contact report here, it says, in terms of speaking about Billy, it says, and what your desire is, what you want to bring the human beings, is unity, peace, conquered knowledge, wisdom, love, freedom, and harmony, and more profound truth. And cognizant that in the entire creation realm, in the entire universe, everything is one, and it's all bound together. So we can't chop down all these trees and expect it to not have a bad effect. You can't put these freeways in and kill all these animals through roadkill and not have it have effect. So there is a oneness and connectedness with all and everything. And it comes from the universal consciousness, this connectedness, this oneness. And this is one of the important things that we learn from studying the creation. And the creation is the universal consciousness. You could think of it as the universe's internal and external body. The universe that we live in is the material manifestation of the wisdom of creation. The law of love that I talked about is, we're talking about the highest form of love, which is called effective love. There is a love that is affective, which is based on romantic feelings, it's based on attraction, and it is a very love that is very temporary. It doesn't always last very long. It's probably the kind of love people pursue most of their life because it's romantic. And it causes the great swirl of emotion, and it causes kind of a stimulation. But real love is very stable. It's very effective. It's based on knowledge, and it's based on observation. It's based on reverence. Where this artificial love that people pursue their whole life, that books are written about and songs are written about, it's not even real love. It's not a stable love. The love that you have for your brother, your sister, your mother, your father, your pets, the love you have for nature, this is the kind of love that's real. This is the kind of love that is stabilizing. And that's the law of love. It's the first principle in creation. It's the highest principle. And it's the probably the least understood. The physical nature radiates this love. If you have something called M-finding, which is a spiritual process which goes on in your spirit form, you will start to be able to sense this highest form of love that's radiating from creation itself. And it's very profound when you can start to sense that. It is a whole level of understanding that comes to you. There's another law called the law of striving, which is the fundamental law of all evolution. Without striving, there is no life. And striving is so important, and it's amazing. I predict the more you learn from this stuff, the more striving you'll have to do. It's kind of a warning. I don't understand it, but that's been my case. Page 102 in The Way to Live. Striving creates the life right up to the being. Striving makes delectation in a form which is always fulfilling and progressive. That's one thing that's strange, is if you can keep your thoughts neutral, positive while you're striving, even though you're working your tail off, you will have satisfaction from it. To be without striving means unwillingness and affliction. If you're going through a stage in your life where you're afflicted, it could be because of you need to push on your striving. Affliction is inhibited striving and inhibited life. But inhibited striving and inhibited life bring inhibited evolution, stagnation, hopelessness. If you have hopelessness right now in your life, get to work. Find something to work on, even if you're out of a job or whatever. Find something to work on. Your hopelessness will leave, your grief, your confusion will leave, your irrationality, your joylessness will leave. If you go back to striving, without striving, there is no life. Without striving, there is no happiness. The other important law is the law of harmony, which says there is a positive to a negative. Life has a neutral positive balance. And you should learn, eventually you'll learn the skill of being neutral positive in your thinking. And you'll be able to evaluate your own thoughts and determine and say, oh, myself, gosh, I'm no longer neutral positive in my thinking. And one of the things you can do is tell yourself, I'm confident, I'm optimistic, I'm relaxed, I'm cheerful. And those four things will help put you back in. Billy also has some things as far as things you might want to tell yourself when you feel yourself slipping. Another one is, I always remain relaxed and thereby gain might over myself. I always remain relaxed and thereby gain might over myself. So good feelings, good thoughts lead to good feelings. The feelings always come from the thoughts, typically. Good feelings will lead to good habits. Good habits lead to good circumstances. So pretty much the truth is your circumstances of your life are directly related to your thinking. Now, the thinking may be subconscious, unconscious, that you're not even aware of. You're creating these difficulties in your life. So your circumstances will align to your thinking. The human being attracts and brings to fruition that which he consciously or secretly strives for and loves. So there are certain things that we strive for we may not even be aware of. So you are the master of your own destiny. You are the master of the circumstances of your life. Your thoughts have tremendous power. You need to make them purposeful. And the more purposeful your thinking is, the more power your thoughts will have. You are not subject to circumstances out of your control. The thought of you is incredible. The power of your thinking is off the scale. Your spirit form is a fragment of the universal consciousness. That spirit form, through all these millions of years of reincarnation, will continue to grow in power. You are the master of your own destiny. Good thoughts lead to good feelings. Your consciousness should be like a beautiful garden filled with beautiful trees and bushes and plants and fruit and vegetables. Your consciousness should be luxurious. Imagine a beautiful garden. That's what your consciousness should be like. Now, if you think negative thoughts, if you think thoughts that are unbalanced, you're going to have weeds grow in your consciousness. And it's going to choke out the good plants. And you can literally create synapses in your brain of wrong thinking. And when you go down these synapses, your thoughts will travel down these pathways automatically, and you'll have these loops and loops of thoughts that you get trapped in. Negative thoughts that repeat, 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 repeat. Break that repetition. Tell yourself, I'm confident. I'm optimistic. I'm relaxed. I'm cheerful. Gain the power of your thoughts. We have within us something called the creation spirit energy, the creational spirit energy. It's interweaving through the entire universe. The entire universe is laced with this energy. And this energy has an intelligence of its very own. But the word intelligence shouldn't be likened to the intelligence of human beings. This intelligence that comes from the spirit energy has the effect of bringing forth life forms and matter. This spirit energy even stays in the body after death for 4 hours or so. The spirit energy stays in the body, and that's when they can harvest organs and give us organs to other people. And the spirit energy is a part of the universal consciousness. The spirit, the universal consciousness is called a Wesenheiten in the German. And it's in some respects more like water or the ocean or more like rocks or gases. That's a little bit more like what the universal consciousness is like. It doesn't have a personality. Strange, isn't it? It radiates love, but has no personality. It follows a predetermination in its evolution. It doesn't, You know, the human being, his personality affects his evolution. He decides to focus and evolve, or he decides just to stay back and enjoy himself, or get lost in doing some worthless activities. But the universal consciousness has a very predetermined form of evolution. It's predetermined, where the human being, his free will, is making the decision to study, making the decision to not get involved in things that are pulling him out of his line of growth. So that's the difference. The universal consciousness is very strange to our perception of things. It's not a heavenly father. It's a neutral, positive spirit. It doesn't sentence people to hell, doesn't bring you to a heaven. The laws of the universe are about personal responsibility. And it's your goal in this lifetime to evolve consciously as much as you possibly can. And your happiness depends on your striving to evolve consciously. The biggest challenge will be controlling your thoughts. That's always what the thoughts are all about. Let me close out with this little section from the Might of Thoughts book. Every effect is based on a preceding cause. Therefore, in the entire universe, everything develops according to the law of cause and effect, the result of which also the so-called gifts from heaven, as well as the human being's own powers and foreordinations being granted to him and her and so forth, are the products of his or her efforts, and indeed the product of his or her mental and manual endeavors, whereby the thoughts in particular represent the most important factor of the whole thing. Because every imagining, every wish, and every conscious effort in regard to the setting and the achievement of the zeal stands or falls as a result of the might of thoughts. Thus, purely intellectual possessions, as well as purely consciousness-based and spiritual possessions, are the fruits of achieved efforts. And these possessions are the fruits of the thoughts, which are just as complete in themselves as they are in their effects. When everything is brought to fruition by means of the might of the thoughts, and it is therefore indisputable that all things which the human being is able to create by means of visions, ruminations, and fantasizing are made real, or can be made real, by means of the might of the thoughts. The rumination, the vision or the fantasy, the ideal which the human being mentally creates by means of her consciousness determines his or her life. Because that which is tended and nurtured as an idea is important for the life way, the circumstances of life in the evolutive process. Therefore, that which applies yet again is this: that which the human being thinks, he or she becomes. The might of the thoughts determines that. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you next weekend, folks. Bye-bye.